This is The Exchange on KUCB. I'm Stephanie Joyce. Just outside of Alaska, there's a shipping superhighway. Dozens of vessels, many foreign flagged, pass by on their way to and from Asia every day, mostly unseen. That is, until they're in trouble. Captain Ed Page is the executive director of the Marine Exchange of Alaska, a nonprofit organization that tracks vessels moving through the region. The Marine Exchange is often the first to know when something goes wrong, and as a result, it plays an important role in the region's shipping safety net. Thanks for joining me, Captain Page.
Well, thank you, Stephanie. It's an honor to be here.
All right. Well, just before we get started, let me remind listeners that they can call in with their questions or comments. The number is 581-1888, or you can send an email to news@kucb.org. So just to get started, you know, the Marine Exchange is a relatively new organization, started in 2000, if I understand correctly.
That's correct.
You know, what was the impetus for starting the Marine Exchange?
Well, actually, we are a new organization, haven't started in 2000, but the Marine Exchange is actually go back to the 1800s. So we're the most recent Marine Exchange. And the idea, if you flip the words around, makes more sense. It's really exchange maritime information. So perhaps a better name, the Maritime Information Exchange or what have you. But unfortunately, we're kind of stuck with this name since they started that in the 1800s. We'll adopt that particular moniker. But and that basically we do is broker information. And I was in the Coast Guard for some 33 years. And when I wanted information on ships, I would call the Marine Exchange. Because they originally started off with people on spyglasses on the hills scanning the horizon so the shippers didn't have to all stand looking out their windows or walking, pacing the waterfront. They could go have a cup of coffee or be home or what have you. And then they would broker that information or actually semaphore across the bay in San Francisco Bay or in Baltimore Harbor and L.A., what have you. And then they would mobilize trade. So they'd say, well, three-master, southbound, black hull, so that's probably my ship. I got cargo to move. I'm going to put down the coffee pay and go to work. Well, so even as a Coast Guard person, when I had to inspect the vessel or as an incident happening, I would call the Marine Exchange, who had radio contact with many vessels nearby, and they would say, well, it's coming in right now. The pilot boat's heading out there. You can go on the pilot boat. You can wait till the tugboat goes there. But they were just brokering information for the shippers, the tugboats, the pilot boats, the line handlers. People had to meet the vessel, either doctors or crew or what have you, and cargo interests. So they broker information. But there's another application that, and I was served as a group commander and a captain of port and chief of marine safety of the Pacific area over the years. And I got involved in some fairly significant cases that have a significant emotional event, perhaps, you might call them, or search and rescue cases that went bad and vessels sank with all hands. And I was involved in recovering the bodies, or the Exxon Valdez oil spill, which was, I worked there for 3 years. It was a really sobering event. You know, earlier in my career, I loved the idea of going on burning ships. And in fact, back in the 80s, I was on a burning ship here in Dutch Harbor and first came here in 73 on a Coast Guard cutter. But as I got older, I maybe got wiser and realized maybe we should prevent these things instead of chasing after them. And you're always going to have accidents, but you really want to minimize those and minimize the consequences. And so having information on vessels, I found, would save lives. If you knew where to do the search, and not just search, just rescued, and if you were monitoring vessels, if Hazelwood, the master of the Exxon Valdez, was being watched by the Coast Guard at the time, he wouldn't have gone out of the channel. But he knew he was beyond the watchful eye of the Coast Guard. He went down below, told his crew to sidestep the iceberg and go out of the channel and hit the rocks. And so the rest is history. So I believe that tracking aids many different functions, safety, environmental protection, the efficiency, coordination of shipping activity, and even maritime security. If you had a cruise ship that was attacked, you want to know where that is and where other ships are to help it and where the other cruise ships are to protect them. So there's many different applications.
So these days, you don't do as much standing on cliffs with a telescope.
Absolutely
ship
not.
Spotting. How do you go about actually tracking these vessels?
That's a good point. Thank heavens for technology, because otherwise this would not even exist. The Marine Exchange for Alaska, of seeing ships all throughout Alaska, and that is impossible without new technologies. The spyglass concept, a call on the radio, or a 20-mile radar, all those don't answer the mail. Just simply throw them out. I can't use those tools. I need something different. So we're now using satellite tracking technology and automatic identification systems to pick up signals that are generated by vessels and track them. And the accuracy and the detail is phenomenal. I mean, you really know a vessel within a couple meters. You know every couple seconds where a vessel is. They're required to have these transponders required by international trade or IMO, International Maritime Organization, and treaties, what have you, require this on most vessels or commercial vessels. So actually now you can pick up the signals provided you have the receivers.
Which is obviously where your organization comes in, because until recently there weren't very many receivers out here in the Aleutians, as I understand
it. There were none. In fact, the only receivers at the Coast Guard or military receivers are in place are in Prince William Sound, in the vicinity of where the Exxon Valdez happened. And they built them in the lower 48 to receive these signals that vessels are transmitting. But when it came down to looking at the money, they simply, Congress was not able to provide the funds to build a very comprehensive system for Alaska, which right now we have about 100 marine safety sites in Alaska, going from Kaktovik out to Adak down to Ketchikan. And so it was really a matter of finding an innovative way of providing this capability without breaking a bank. So basically, we relied on the maritime community, who we work very closely with. We're a nonprofit maritime organization. And we went to the state of Alaska, the Coast Guard, the tug companies, the pilot organizations, the port offices, say, can we pull together and make this happen? So instead of buying a commercial tower, in many places, we'll be in a tug office or a pilot station or a school or old abandoned lighthouse and what have you. So we'll travel throughout Alaska and in some cases just camp out and build a satellite a transmission station, but basically an AIS receiving station, but a power plant. There'd be no power. Can't plug in the wall. There is no wall on top of the mountain, Nikolsky. So we sent some of our staff up there and players up there, and they basically put the solar panels, wind generator, a weather station, AIS receiver, a wireless bridge. And next thing you know, you're seeing vessels 200 miles offshore from Nikolsky in our operations center in Juneau, which is tied into all the other sensors right here in Ballyhoo Mountain, at the pilot station here, Akun Island, and then we were on Akutan. I guess we were on both islands now I think about it. And St. Paul, St. George, but all that information is pulled together into a display on the internet and through a graphical user interface. So when there's an accident or just people can replay and see where vessels are, if they're doing strategic planning, they'll look at that information and see how much traffic is going through the UNIMAC Pass. Well, 9,000 vessels. Everyone comes to us asking, can you show us where they are, which vessels are, how fast they go? How come that vessel is acting funny? It's broken down. Well, maybe we should get a tug out there. Where are the tugs? We'll show you where the tugs are.
And you, I mean, in the past, you've often been the person who knows what's happening with a vessel, sometimes even before, you know, the Coast Guard does. I called you not too long ago about the Shinanoe, that huge tanker that broke down out in the Western Aleutians. And I had called the Coast Guard first, and they didn't really know what was going on with it. And I called you, and you said, yeah, they're moving really slowly, you know. So how does the Marine Exchange fit into the response strategy for incidents like that?
Well, we work very closely with the Coast Guard. We're trying to be very proactive. So the Coast Guard can't look at every single thing going on. But we have a lot of alarms that go off to trigger that might or might not be a – and we have a 24-hour operations center. So when the alarms go off, we kind of vet them to see if that's a legitimate alarm or not legitimate alarm. We have ship security alerts. Our systems go off, alarms – in our operations center, we have OOG alarms going off when a cruise ship gets in a flight path in Kodiak Airport to prevent a cruise ship from a plane crashing the cruise ship. All kinds of interesting things. Monitoring cables that run down to the lower 48 for our fiber lines, we monitor those. We monitor speed of vessels going through whale-protected areas to validate compliance with the speed restrictions. If they don't, an email gets sent off the Park Service, and they notify me you need to slow down or give them a ticket type of thing. So we are constantly having using technology to send alarms off. Everything we see, the Coast Guard sees. The state also sees, shares our data with the state of Alaska. And the Maritime Ministry has our information. So the many entities that need and want this information. So we basically say user pays. Anyone who needs the information can pay into that system and support its operation. As opposed to like the vessel traffic service the Coast Guard operates in Valdez, it's funded by the federal government, and they don't share their information for security or other reasons. In our case, we'll share it with anyone who's willing to participate in the support of operating and maintaining and building out the system.
So anybody who's a member of your organization can log on to this vessel tracking system and see where ships are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so we're watching ships even as they depart from the Far East or from Seattle. We're watching... In fact, the whole West Coast, we're watching ships up and down the West Coast, out to Hawaii, out the Far East. So we really have what they call maritime domain awareness, knowing where ships are. And that's a valuable tool. day-to-day, just efficiency. Not standing in the dock going, I don't have a ship here, and I'm here at 2 in the morning. Supposed to be working. I could be sleeping. That's kind of my motivation from the outset. I like value my sleep. I don't want to be standing on the dock on a rainy night if there's no ship there. So I want good information. And so there's some selfish reason behind that. And also, when I started this organization up in Alaska, I started by tracking my daughter going down the Yukon River in her canoe. So there's other selfish reasons why I would do that. And my staff have tracked me, and I go on kayaking trips to make sure they can deliver beer when I return. So there's some other applications that probably aren't as noble, but nevertheless, they to motivate you to do something proactive in this area.
Now, I imagine that, you know, when you are tracking these ships and you do see something going wrong, you know, you open your laptop and or your computer and you see something happening. You know, where do you go with that information? What happens?
Well, typically it depends who's really would be an interested party. I was a disinterested party when I was in South America a couple months ago when the Culloch was having problems. And I get emails and I look at it going, interesting, but I'm in South America, and my staff was on top of it. But the admiral was calling our office saying, I need the username and password. I want to go home. I'm tired of being in the operations center. I want it on my iPad. And so he said, okay, here's the username and password. Go on your iPad to check what's going on. But from the outset, the Coast Guard was involved, the Shell was involved, and we're just brokering information. We're not launching anything. We're just providing information so they can do their work, send their helicopters or other tugboats, what have you. We're just brokering information. And so that is what really we're doing. Is if a vessel's in the wrong area up in the Arctic, which has happened where they got close to an area, Shell says we want to know ahead of time because we'll be held responsible. Even though we don't own that vessel, if something goes wrong, they're going to come to us. Alarm goes off. The Coast Guard doesn't care. Really, it's not their issue. It's a Shell issue. And Fish and Wildlife Service issue, for that matter. So, and maybe BOEM and what have you. But so we will initiate a call to the ship and to Shell and say it looks like getting close to this off limits area. You may want to take some action, or it might be ACS or GCI cables if it's a situation where cables broke, or it could be FAA if it's in this instance where a plane is approaching the airport and has a cruise ship going in the vicinity of the flight path. So it really depends who would act on that information, whether the Coast Guard or someone else.
So you mentioned the Arctic. You have receivers up in the Chukchi Sea region, and you're able to track vessels that are moving through the Bering Strait?
Absolutely. In fact, much like our prior governor, we can actually see Russia from our backyard if we have the iPad on with our username password entered into our tracking account. So if anyone's going through the Bering Strait, we got them. We see them, provided they're meeting the regulations and have the equipment on board as required, which basically all do for the most part. So we can, and this morning a call from the mayor of Nome wants to know all the traffic in 2012 to the Bering Strait. Went by her backyard, so to speak, and we provided track lines and graphics and names of vessels, size of vessels, where they were going to, speed, whatever. All that information is available to us in our database. So we can go back the whole year and say, no problem. Oh, you want a 2010? No problem.
And so without you, would that information just simply not be available?
That's true. I mean, basically, Committee for Marine Transportation Systems and Presidential Committee is calling me from D.C. I've had hearings at Congress a couple times. And they're all coming over to us and say, we need your information for UNIMAC Pass, or Dixon Entrance, or Bering Strait, or off of Barrow, Chukchi Sea, out by Adak, what have you. So we're really the, I wouldn't say the font of all knowledge, but a lot of knowledge on ships anyway. We had the best information available.
And so from, you know, what you've seen, have you seen changes in shipping in the region, especially here in the Aleutians over the last couple of years?
Absolutely. It's exciting to always come back to Dutch Harbor. I love coming back here. As I said, I first came out here in 1973, so certainly a lot of changes since 73 to 2013. This is, even though I've been coming back here for 40 years, this is the first time anybody's interested in hearing me say anything about it. So thank you very much, Stephanie. And the next 40 years can invite me back again. But certainly I've seen changes and growth. I like to refer to the Aleutian Islands as I-5, of the maritime I-5. It's incredible. You look at the graphics and ships transiting by, it is just a major thoroughfare. And they're coming from around the world. And so there's much more traffic than ever was. There are larger ships. They're going faster. Certainly there's increased risk, but through technology, you can manage that risk to the level that was even less than it was beforehand. So you can identify when things are turning bad, then waiting for someone to call for assistance. You can see, like the Celadonga U now, if that vessel broke down now, we would see it. We wouldn't have to wait 14 hours to see that vessel is disabled and needs help. Alarms would go off. We'd say something's funny going on. That ship's not moving. Should be moving. Most ships are moving unless something's wrong. We start making inquiries and start finding tugs and talking to the Coast Guard, and then we'd step back and let them do whatever they want to do, but at least get the information to hand so they can mobilize a response. So the things are changing. I'm very intrigued and interested as far as and involved right now. I'm just looking at the new activity where the oil exploration is being supported out of Dutch Harbor. And the port community, which I find very proactive and strategic and thought certainly led by your ubiquitous and very energetic mayor and the city manager, Chris Latiker, dealt with them many times. And they called me out to help come up with some game plan or harbor safety plan that ensures that they still accommodate your number one users of this port, which is the fishing community. That's your bread and butter, and that's the mainstay, and that's what you're known for, and that's what you do really well, and then supply the world with food. And ensure that the oil exploration, which is also important, does not displace or cause undue negative impacts on the port of Dutch Harbor, but can be accommodated. So there are ways of doing that. Through technology, we can validate where vessels are going, position them in the right anchorages. If something, if they're drift off or whatever, you can alarms will go off and you can validate and notify them ahead of time. But you can also see where the space is available in the port, where they can go, and what have you. So we're going to use this and other tools and work with the maritime community in processes so we can accommodate everybody, kumbaya, if you will. We're all getting along.
So you're going to be doing that. You're doing that this week, right, and you'll be continuing to work on it. And yes. So we'll probably see a little bit more of you here
Absolutely.
In the port of Dutch Harbor.
I'll keep coming back like Bad Penny. I'll keep on showing up.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have, but thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you.